It's Wednesday, April 17th, 2024, and I'm Dave Sobel. Welcome to the Business of Tech Lounge. Today on the show, AI in healthcare with some insight on adoption rates, a dose of the future infused with AI as the holodeck arrives, frameworks and policies with John Gillam, a preview of this weekend's interview on the nuclear event in cybersecurity, and your questions and comments. Now, I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support makes this show possible. Focus on your IT Salesforce workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BUILDR.com. Want to get your logo right here? Vendors, you can do so with our Vendor Patreon program. It's a simple monthly subscription, and visit patreon.com/MSBradio to sign up. I can't do the show without support, and thanks again to Sales Builder for theirs. Now, I do take questions and comments throughout the show, so make sure to put them in the chat. We'll have a dedicated question section in the show later with all those listener-submitted questions, but we'll throw those chat comments up anytime. But first, our top story. Now, I want to dive into Aavik's recent IT Trends 2024 industry report. The report identifies a persistent shortage of skilled workers as the primary challenge for IT teams in 2024. As a consequence, there's an increased investment in IT, with budgets expanding to accommodate needs for automation and outsourcing. There's a notable increase in investments in automation technologies. 24% more IT professionals plan to invest in automation in 2024 compared to 2023. Almost 96% of IT professionals, so almost all, are using at least one AI or ML tool to improve efficiency. A significant portion of IT teams are outsourcing tasks, particularly network-related functions, to manage workforce shortages. Nearly 3 out of 4 respondents indicated that at least some network-related tasks are being outsourced. Nearly 58% of C-suite executives expressed high confidence that their organization's network toolset meets the needs of remote workers, whereas only 35% of IT technicians shared this confidence. This disparity suggests that upper management may not be fully aware of the operational challenges faced by their IT teams, potentially leading to decisions that do not align with the technical realities and needs. There's also a notable difference in how customer satisfaction is prioritized across organizational levels. About 46% of C-suite executives list customer satisfaction as the most important metrics, compared to only 26% of technicians. This suggests that while executives focus on customer outcomes as a measure of success, technicians may be more concerned with resolving immediate technical issues, perhaps due to being overburdened with tasks. The majority, it's 86% of respondents, reported increased budgets in 2024, with nearly 50% saying they expect to see an increase of at least 20% from 2023. In terms of specific investments, 48% of survey respondents shared that they're investing most heavily in SaaS management and monitoring tools, 46% shared they're investing in Wi-Fi management, and another 46% shared they're investing in cloud monitoring and in management. So, why do we care? It's this disparity. It's always the disparity. When you look at the differences between leadership and those doing the work, that misalignment causes the most friction. And in fact, I think this is the critical area to focus upon, particularly when you look at the difference between priorities of C-suite executives focusing on customer sat and technicians not doing the same. Or that disconnect between focusing on business outcomes where their technicians are not doing the same. And in fact, it's a very similar gap. We're seeing roughly 20% difference between the two. And in that 20%, that's the key opportunity. Those that are able to execute here and outperform are the ones that are going to do far better. It's why we care. I don't want you to focus so much on the tool sets or where they're necessarily investing. I want you to focus on the cultural gaps between leadership and those that are doing work. And it's important for you to make sure internally as an IT service provider and as a managed services provider that you're teaching your people the right skills to make sure they can communicate effectively with your customer base. That's the takeaway here that I think is most interesting. I think there's areas of growth for both providers and for their customers to focus on that interdependency. And by the way, I want to note that 96% of IT professionals saying they're using at least one AI or ML tool. I'm not surprised by that, but it's how effectively they're using it that we're going to want to dig into further. Now, if you got a question or a comment, make sure to put it in the chat if you're watching live. We will take any questions during our question section later. Now, you know I love a good use case. So let's dive into TechCrunch's look at generative AI making its way into healthcare. And not everyone is convinced of its readiness. While there are investments and startups focused on generative AI in healthcare, concerns remain about its limitations and efficacy. Studies have shown that generative AI struggles with complex medical queries and can produce incorrect diagnoses. Additionally, there's worries about perpetuating stereotypes and biases. So let's quote directly from the article. Quote, only about half, at 53%, of U.S. consumers said they thought generative AI could improve healthcare, for example, by making it more accessible or shortening appointment wait times. Fewer than half said they expected generative AI to make medical care more affordable. Andrew Pokorsky, chief AI officer at the VA Sunshine Healthcare Network, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs' largest health system, doesn't think that the cynicism is unwarranted. Pokorsky warned that generative AI's deployment could be premature due to its significant limitations and the concerns about its efficacy. Quote, one of the key issues with generative AI is its inability to handle complex medical queries or emergency, he told TechCrunch. Its finite knowledge base, that is the absence of up-to-date clinical information, and the lack of human expertise make it unsuitable for providing comprehensive medical advice or treatment recommendations. Several studies suggest there's credence to these points. In a paper in the journal JAMA Pediatrics, OpenAI's generative AI chatbot, ChatGPT, which some healthcare organizations have piloted for limited use cases, was diagnosing pediatric diseases 83% of the time. And in OpenAI's GPT-4 as a diagnostic assistant, physicians at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston observed that the model ranked the wrong diagnosis as its top answer nearly 2 times out of 3. And this section, quote, Arun Thirvasascu, a clinical research fellow at the University of Oxford, said there's nothing unique about generative AI precluding its deployment in healthcare settings. Quote, more mundane applications of generative AI technology are feasible the short and long term and include text correction, automatic documentation of notes and letters, and improved search features to optimize electronic patient records, he said. There's no reason why generative AI technology, if effective, couldn't be deployed these sorts of roles immediately. But while generative AI shows promise in specific narrow areas of medicine, experts like Borkowski point to the technical and compliance roadblocks that must be overcome before generative AI can be used and trusted as an all-around assistive healthcare tool. Significant privacy and security concerns surround using generative AI in healthcare, Borkowski said. The sensitive nature of medical data and the potential for misuse or unauthorized access pose severe risks to patient confidentiality and trust in the healthcare system. Furthermore, the regulatory and legal landscape surrounding the use of generative AI in healthcare is still evolving, with questions around liability, data protection, and the practice of medicine by non-human entities still needing to be solved. Another thought leader, bullish as he is around generative AI in healthcare, says there needs to be rigorous science behind tools that are patient-facing. So, why do we care? It's the studies. It's the thinking strategically around what the right use cases are. I don't necessarily think that everything is going to be effective in all cases right away, but there are obvious, easy places to find those initial investments. Note-taking, text correction, automatic documentation, summarization of information, obvious first use cases that will get adoption quickly. Beyond that, you're going to be looking to find out what more results are coming out of these kinds of studies to help guide your clients through the kinds of investments they're going to be making. It's not going to happen overnight, and that's a good thing because we want to have thought through those various pieces. And you can use those first rounds of implementations to help guide with policy and procedure to make sure that you're not putting confidential information into untrustworthy agents or making sure that your people understand the correct use. And ultimately, the thing that I'm finding most consistent across all of these use cases is the places where humans remain in the loop are the most effective. So that's why we care. We continue to look for use cases that are effective and are working out well for customers in order to leverage them further in expansive service offerings. Now, reminder, we continue to take questions, and I'll watch that chat. If you've got something to say, we do appreciate it. And by the way, for that listener who liked the videos, thank you very much. It's much appreciated. Now, last weekend, there was an interview that came out with John Gillam, whose company focuses on AI detection. He joined me for an interview that released last weekend. Here's a segment of that interview.
I think that leads me to then to where my next question is, how do you tell people to best use AI detectors to be effective?
So most of our use case is within the world of marketing. So where we have people that are have writers on staff that are creating content. They're happy to pay those writers $100, $1,000 or an article, whatever it might be. They're not super happy when they find out that that content was copied and pasted out of ChatGPT in 5 seconds. That doesn't feel like a fair value exchange. And so the way we recommend our tech be used is within the copy editor. So whoever's receiving the content from writers, use the tool as a spot check and build up a live history with each writer to understand, okay, this person has always had, 0% AI detected. They had one article that was a 50%, sort of a flip of a coin. The classifier was unclear, and then it was back to 0%. So, probably that's a situation where the classifier or detector got it wrong. Let that go. There's other situations where you would see a trend on a writer that used to get 0%. Is now getting 90%, 100%, 100%. Pretty good sign that that writer is now using AI. And if that's not within your policies, then you should not be using that content.
Gotcha. So how are you then advising organizations to put their policies together? What are the questions that you think are most important to answer?
Yeah, I think this comes back to that first question that you asked around understanding within the organization where the risk associated with AI having input into content that you might not want exists. And so if you have a part of your organization where absolutely no content, no AI usage is allowed, some law firms are taking that approach, some medical organizations are taking that approach, where we want no chance that AI is being used. We want whoever's writing this to have 100% responsibility on the words that have been used. And in those situations, then the policy will be different than, say, the marketing team, where there's a little bit of sort of let time build up, let some data build up, where there's a sort of a stronger, more binary approach, potentially within law firms. So I think it comes back to sort of a nuanced approach, but making it clear to the editors who are then in charge of policing whatever policy gets enforced, but creating a policy that accurately reflects the risks at that size of that portion of the organization.
So ultimately, we have to ask, why do we care? I loved this conversation with John because it was the application of practical tools in a way that helped enforce policy, and it was a great example of human in the loop. Really, if you've missed this, I would encourage you to dive in here because he walks through the various ways that the organizations that leverage his toolkit use the product to be thoughtful. And one of the things is much more about finding trends and patterns than it is around specific implementation. Hear what John was talking about. If he's engaged, you're working with a marketing firm who's hired an organization for content management and they want to look at each writer, what they're doing over time is they're running it through the detector and they're getting a sense of how that person works over time. They are able to then look at those exceptions and find out and make a determination whether or not that's actually an exception or look for a larger pattern of increasing usage of AI to generate tools and break the relationship they have. I found it to be a really insightful set of uses, and the way we could think about applying policies and procedures in our day-to-day operations. I encourage you to listen to it. It is on the YouTube feed and the podcast feed now. Now, remember, we're continuing to take questions, and you can submit them anytime in the chat window. Or if you're listening to the recording, go ahead and submit for next week and send to question@mspradio.com. Now, I've got one more story before we dive into questions, and it's a use case I just had to write up. Holodeck, a system for generating interactive 3D environments, has been developed to train robots in navigating real-world environments. It's leveraging large language models, and Holodeck can generate a wide range of indoor environments based on user requests. The system has been found to outpace human-created tools in terms of realism and accuracy, and has shown positive effects on the agent's ability to navigate new spaces. Holodeck addresses the challenge of efficiently generating diverse environments for robot training, expanding the scope of research beyond residential spaces. Quoting the article, named for its Star Trek forebear, Holodeck generates a virtually limitless range of indoor environments using AI to interpret users' requests. Quote, we can use language to control it, says Yang. You can easily describe whatever environments you want and train the embodied AI agents, end quote. Holodeck leverages the knowledge embedded in large language models, the systems underlying ChatGPT, and other chatbots. Language is a very concise representation of the entire world, says Yang. Indeed, LLMs turn out to have a surprisingly high degree of knowledge about the design of spaces, thanks to the vast amounts of text they ingest during training. In essence, Holodeck works by engaging an LLM in conversation, using a carefully structured series of hidden queries to break down user requests into specific parameters. And just like Captain Picard might ask Star Trek's holodeck to simulate a speakeasy, researchers can ask Penn's holodeck to create a 1B1B apartment of a researcher who has a cat. The system executes this query by dividing it into multiple steps. First, the floor and walls are created, then the doorway and windows. Next, Holodeck searches the Objectverse, a vast library of pre-made digital objects for the sort of furnishings you might expect in such a space, a coffee table, a cat tower, and so on. Finally, Holodeck queries a layout module, which the researchers designed to constrain the placement of objects so you don't wind up with a toilet extending horizontally from the wall. Now, why do we care? I love pulling interesting use cases again over and over, and we can always borrow from science fiction to get a sense of what's coming. Think this through. They're using the Unreal Engine to build virtual environments on demand for testing scenarios. It's incredibly powerful. If you need an infinite test variety to test robots in, you can now do so with this simulation, and they can actually generate the graphical representations of full environments, fully rendered using Unity. This is exactly the kind of thinking that we want to do. You might want to do it from a designer perspective for a single environment, but some use cases will require that infinite numbers. And that's where the recursive use of these kinds of tools are particularly interesting. Now, we care because we want to extend the application and thinking again to our own customers. Are there scenarios where we can leverage these kinds of technologies to create multiples and scenarios we haven't before, or be able to create data sets that we might not have been able to test against prior? That's the kind of thinking we want to use when considering these tools. Now, we're coming up on those questions. Make sure to put them in chat if you've got any last minute ones. I do love taking them. And focus first, always, on those user submitted ones. Remember, bring your questions live and you'll get a live response. This is a great part of the show to get involved with our ongoing discussions. Let's take our first submitted question.
What are the potential impacts of cybersecurity company acquisitions on the service quality and client relationships of MSPs?
The acquisition question. You know, this one comes around every so often for me to get my thoughts on what happens when companies are acquired. I start with my basic advice. Anytime a company is acquired, do not panic and understand what your contractual obligations are. because ultimately the company wants to continue to engage and receive your customer engagement and receive your money on an ongoing basis. So they're going to protect that contract as best as they can. And they are obligated to do that continuing based on the contract that you have with the previous organization. And remember, post-acquisition, there's always 12, 18, or 24 months of merger as the two organizations come together. Oftentimes, when you consider changes in organizations, they don't come until after that process is concluded. So the time to think about that and be engaged is not at the time of transaction. It's either 2 years down the road when they are in a position to start making changes, or on your contract end. So from my perspective, I think about it from that rhythm. And I advise people to not worry on day one. Now, here's the other thing that I think is important, specific to the listener's question around cybersecurity. There are, frankly, too many cybersecurity companies out there to support the market. I'm anticipating we're going to see consolidation of those vendors into a lesser set. Either companies will get acquired for talent or technology and get rolled up into more robust organizations. So you should be in a position where you're expecting more acquisitions in the cybersecurity space. It's been heavily funded by VCs and private equity over the past number of years, meaning those companies are looking for ways to extract that value out, and they're going to look to do that with mergers and acquisitions. So you should expect that there are going to be more of them to have less cybersecurity companies over time, frankly, because we have too many. It's great taking questions. I love doing it. Make sure you send them in for next week if you didn't get a chance for yours to be heard this week. Now, I want to highlight an upcoming interview, something that's coming out this coming weekend, an interview with Rodrigo Lorero on cybersecurity defense. Here's a clip from that interview.
You've also offered that AI may be part of the defense. How do you think that fits in as a countermeasure?
So more than just that, I think AI is the only defense that we can have against these. It's essentially an arms race, right? You don't bring a knife to a gunfight, and the attackers are going to use AI. There's nothing you can do about that. So if on our side, on the defense side, you are hesitant about the use of AI, you don't want your people to use AI, you are essentially putting your cyber defenses with knives, arming them with knives to fight off gunslingers. So that's why I think that we must use AI. One of the most obvious applications of AI is in terms of cybersecurity analysts. Our industry is desperately lacking qualified cybersecurity analysts. So AI can contribute to increase the effectiveness and the productivity of those cybersecurity analysts, because right now the few that we have are already overwhelmed with responding to incidents. In order to increase and protect against these heightened attackers, the only way we can do that is through the use of AI.
Rodrigo has some bold points. In fact, he thinks AI may be a nuclear level event in cyber. I do push back in the interview, and I'm encouraged for you all to listen to that on this coming weekend. And we'll discuss again next week in the live show. A reminder for listeners that my Patreon supporters already have this video, and you can get all my interview content early as a supporter. Visit patreon.com/MSPradio to sign up now. Now, I want to thank Sales Builder, our Patreon sponsor, whose support made this show possible. Focus on your IT sales workflow with the power of automation and visit them at salesbuilder.com. That's BuildR.com. And vendors, you too can get your name mentioned on the live show. It's a simple monthly subscription. Visit patreon.com/MSPradio for more. And listeners, thank you for all your support. And here's what you can do to help continue with the show. Make sure to like, share, and follow on all your favorite platforms, and share it with your friends and encourage them to listen as well. Or you can support directly on Patreon with our Give What You Want model. You set what you think the content is worth. And if you have a question and are listening to the recording, send it in at question@mspradio.com. Next week, the live show is on Wednesday, so catch us live on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern. Thanks for joining me for the Business of Tech Lounge, and I will see you next time.